We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there, Knicks fans. Right? Hey there, Knicks fans. Hey there, Knicks fans. Hey there, Knicks fans. How you doing? It's your boy who's a little kooky right now. Jonathan Macri with you for another episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. You knew it was coming. Couldn't let the preseason go by without everybody's favorite pastime. Women, children, elderly people. Everybody loves it. It's a KFS mailbag. And of course, if it is a KFSL mailbag, you know what time it is, whose time it is. He needs entrance music at this point. He's become probably too famous for entrance music. I don't know. Chris Persianen, song B, and don't name some rapper who I've never heard of and will never listen to. Give me a song that I actually know.
Oh, Public Service Announcement by Jay-Z.
You know, I have a lot more respect for you now than I did 5 seconds ago. That's awesome.
I feel like that's a good.
Andrew, like you should unmute yourself for the clapping.
Job well done.
Really Chris. Well done.
Well done. Two millennials just very much appreciated that.
I want to say something right now, and it would,
I think nobody is too famous for intro music is the way to go about it.
I think
conversely, nobody is not famous enough for intro music.
Everyone
deserves intro.
Everybody should have intro music. I went for a run this week and I put on predictably whatever it was, like late 90s, early 2000s hip hop and something else, or maybe mid 2000s. I forget when that dropped, but something else from that album came on and I'm like, man, this was a banger. And then I was starting to think about like, if I ever have a 40th birthday party and like a lot of people are there and I got intro music for my 40th birthday party, I would want Public Service Announcement. Does that make me less cool? More cool?
No, I think the fact that, I mean, from your perspective, I think the fact that we came up with the same song would make you cool. I feel like that.
Well, because if it did, well, yeah. How could it make you cool and me not be cool? But for you, it's right? Like an appreciation of older times. But then again, you're the one who drafted like a whole bunch of old farts in our 2010 draft. So that's
a I valued championships and I got a whole lot of them.
Yes, you did. All right. So as we sit here and record this, it's Thursday at about 7:15. I don't know. Maybe we're going to miss out on some kooky IG live stuff from who knows who tonight. Yeah, look, enough banter. You want to just get to the questions? I feel like we have a lot of good ones from the very brief glancing that I did on Twitter today. But as always, I did not read the questions ahead of time. I may have perused very briefly, but these will be fresh off the dome as always.
Well, the other thing is that you may have perused the selection of the pool of questions, but you haven't perused the specific choices. So, no. You know. For the listeners, there's a fair amount of lack of perusal here.
And the time that I would have dedicated to thinking about answers to these questions was spent taking a 20 minute nap before this podcast, because again, I'm an old man.
No, I'm taking naps, man.
It's a beautiful thing.
It's midterm season. Let's get started though. We have SSB guy with our first question. And I'm glad that you said you think we have enough tape, because I'm about to ask you about literally every single player that plays for this team.
Jesus.
Assuming everyone is healthy and including the backups, how would you rank our position groups from best to worst?
That's a great question. That's really good. I don't know, either of you can tell me how to go about this. Am I doing point guard, shooting guard, small? Yeah. Okay.
I would think guards, wings, bigs.
That's the question. It's ball handlers, wings, bigs. You know what? I think it'll be a more fun answer if I do all five positions. I don't want to get into like, where do you put Julius Randle? Is he a wing or
big?
A guard, which I have a feeling as one of the questions I did
have. All right,
today.
Oh.
Wait, what did I say?
This guy said guard.
Wing or big. That's what I meant. Okay. Enough filibustering. I can't believe I'm going to do this. I think I have to put point guard number one. Because of Kemba and Derrick Rose. And even if I don't, I'm considering like half of Emmanuel Quickly for this category.
I was going to say, I think it's Deuce here based on
I'm considering his. Kemba, Rose, half of Emmanuel Quickly, and all of Deuce. That's my point guard group. And then the only other strong consideration that I would give ahead of point guards would be power forward. And that is not because, as Andrew will certainly quip about, I think Obi Toppin is going to like make the, you know, the all NBA team this year. I just think Julius Randle is that good. But this is kind of a knock on my opinion of Obi, that I'm putting power forwards after point guards, because I think Derrick Rose is like that. Like, I think Julius Randle's better than Kemba Walker, but I think Derrick Rose is like that much better than Obi Toppin. Because Derrick Rose is freaking awesome. So point guards one, power forwards two. Ooh, from there it gets interesting. What is RJ technically for us? Is he
small forward?
Small forward? Okay, sure.
He grew a little. He's like 6'7", 6'7" and a half. He's a small forward.
Great. So then I will go small forward next, just because I don't need the pitchforks and torches on my lawn today, sir. So small forward third. So now I'm down.
You're about the Mitch hive is about to.
Everybody has a fucking hive. Can we get one guy on the damn team that doesn't have a hive that is just like, you know what? Whatever you think about him, I don't care. I've been really impressed with Fournier thus far. I was looking at I was keying in on his defense actually today for Friday's newsletter. He hasn't hit anything, but basically him and Quickly and Grimes, I guess I'll consider like half of Grimes as a shooting guard. I'll go centers. You know why? Partially because of Mitch, but mostly because of Taj Gibson. So, and then I put shooting guard last.
Mitch, Nerlens Taj is pretty dandy, but we'll save that for later.
Taj, what a gem.
You can't not love him. You know, as I read the newsletter this morning, I was happy you got to show him a little love in there. He deserves it all. That's
I'll
like
save the jersey. More Taj thoughts for later. Yeah.
That's the jersey that's like the diehard must have, the new diehard must have, in my opinion.
You know what it is? I haven't bought a jersey in probably 20 some odd years. If I could get the whatever the 75th anniversary edition is, the jerseys that they wore, you know, in the 40s, I want to get that Taj jersey. It's gonna be hot.
Clean. Observe and study. After a promising display during the preseason, what is this team's number one concern going into the regular season? I threw this at the beginning so that we can kind of build up from upsetting talk, you know?
Yeah. Well,
I think it's a good question. So
I think somebody asked me this on the post game the other day, and I struggled because the first thing that I thought of was just injuries. But outside of injuries, I think the answer that I came up with, and it's really the only thing that I could come up with in the moment. Although I'll give you one more now. I think concern is like probably too strong of a word, but I think in terms of if we are sitting here and being like, hey, this is a top four seed in the East again, what will prevent us from being a top four seed in the East again? I think if you're looking at a team that's going to be in a top four team in the East this year, you're looking at a team that's probably going to have a top eight net rating, because I think the East is pretty good. If you could argue that the East is better than the West, or at least the top is. So top seven, top eight net rating, even if they are number three or four in defense again, which is not a given because that's, you know, it's hard to control that stat year after year. Unless you have Rudy Gobert in the regular season. So long-winded way of saying, in order to get to that level, the Knicks are going to need to get to like 10th, 11th, probably not much lower than that in offense. And I think it's really hard to make a jump of like 13, 14 spots in offensive rating, which again, that's what we're talking about here, because they were 24th last year, without getting an elite shot creator in the offseason. I've sung Kemba's praises. I love Kemba Walker. I love the Fournier signing. RJ will be better. Obi will be better. I think Julius will be better. All these guys will be better, but that's a big jump. It's a really big jump. And so that would be my concern there. And then the only other thing is, I don't want to say there's too many mouths to feed, but like, someone's going to have to sacrifice a little bit in that starting lineup. Thus far, it's kind of been Fournier. I think, you know, there's been a few instances where he's open in the corner, I've noticed, and the ball doesn't get his way. Not necessarily that it's the wrong play always. You know, but I would guess he's probably going to be fourth in shot attempts in the starting lineup. Like, is he going to be cool with that? He was a guy that shot probably as much as Vucevic in some of those Orlando years. I would need to look it up, but it seemed like he shot a lot when he was down there. But then again, he seems like he's on board and, you know, he got his money. So, but I don't really have a lot of concerns.
Well, he and Kemba said they know their job here is to space the floor for RJ and Julius. So, you know, whether that's clarity between them and the coaching staff and the front office in regards to why they were brought in or whatever it is, like Fournier and the diversity in his shot profile that you get, especially in comparison to Bullock, is just huge for Barrett and Randall.
100%.
I had the same thought.
What
about mouths to feed? You know, I was at the first game and I was there last night. And what I noticed was, we know last year it was kind of like feed Julius and that snowball gets rolling and we've got a game. This year, it's like we genuinely have a lot of guys that can put the ball in the basket. And in the starting lineup, I don't think Julius
is going to mind that though.
No, but I'm saying what it looks like in the start, like Julius got his first touch, like his first like ISO touch, like 6 minutes in or something. It was like, I don't know about guys getting hot early, you know, like I think we're going to see that love get spread around a little more often, which is not a bad thing, but you know, then no, I think you not. Might not get those real, like he's burning us tonight games.
Well, I think we're going to see what we saw in the third quarter, against Detroit, which is like Julius will be more of in the flow of the offense as opposed to the offense for most of games. And then there will be times where Julius is like, all right, I got this, which is like, that's where you want to be with your star player. And he is a star player. So I think it's a good place to be.
We are taking a trip, not back in time, but just out in time a little, just a little zoomed out. I need you to get the memory going here. Mike Perry wants to know who the best dunker in Knicks history was. I threw it at the front because we have a lot of different fun questions and I wanted to get you thinking early.
So
Andrew has his answer.
Andrew, give me an answer, because I had a few names.
That I know who he's thinking too, I think.
Well, the guy that won three dunk contests? That
was, okay, so the two names, my mind immediately went to the dunk contest, and I went and I thought of Kenny Skywalker and Nate Robinson. All due respect to the dunk contest. Spoiler alert for the page, my Patreon top 75. I don't have Vince Carter in top 75.
Yeah.
And it's because I don't really give, like, I'm not considering fucking dunk contests when I think about NBA. So like Nate had some dunks in game. I mean, he dunked over friggin' Yao Ming. I mean, that was a thing that happened. That said, I'm not sure when I think of like the greatest Nick dunkers, he is the first one that pops into my head. I tell you, the guy, man, when Sprewell threw it down, there was a ferocity and an anger to his dunks that was just, it was really great. But I think, you know who my answer honestly is going to be? I can't believe I'm going to say this fucking guy's name.
No way.
Oh my God, John, I was waiting for like to come back and say JR was probably
JR. It has to be JR Smith, because JR, when he wanted to, and he unleashed a few in-game
those dunks, oops.
Mm-hmm.
There were he had some moments, and they were like there were not many humans alive that could do the shit that JR Smith could do. So I guess my answer is actually gonna be JR Smith.
That's not a bad pick. Yes, yeah,
shout out and shout out to John Starks. Did compete in a dunk contest again. I don't think of John Starks as a dunker. And then the only other thing I want to say is Larry Johnson had obviously was not the healthy version of himself when he came here. But if you're asking me who, I would have to, because there may have been some other old guys that came to the Knicks past their prime. But like if you're asking me, like who do I? Like that spent a significant, that had a meaningful portion of their career in New York.
Right, right.
And also had a meaningful portion of their career as a dunker elsewhere. LJ would come to mind.
I kid you not. When you were going through the Skywalkers and the Sprewells, I was like, JR is the one person in game that I think of.
The backwards double clutch alley-oop.
The reverse from Prigioni, right? Well, he has he had one in the playoffs against the Heat, and the one we're thinking of, I think, is against the Spurs.
And then at the game. I'm not sure if it was JR's return game, JR and Iman Shumpert's, I should say, return game after they were sent to Cleveland. But it was one of the first, it was either the first game or the first, one of the first. And I went, it was the first game I ever took Dolores to. JR unleashed an alley-oop from LeBron in that game. And I don't remember the final score, but it was not pretty.
I'm just
JR Smith making family memories.
I'm just going to give everybody some homework. Go to YouTube, type in JR Smith, Gary Neal. And JR literally takes off from the foul line and dunks over him in game. And
he was,
Kevin Harlan meets the moment with the, we just saw a man fly. And it was so good.
It's good.
That's my,
good.
My best Kevin.
Fabulous.
That was great. That was good.
Thank you.
What's up next?
It's a tough impression to do. Next up from Ethan, we have, and I think I know where John's going to lean, but I like where the thought process here is going to take him. So I'm making him answer it anyway. More likely to happen, Randall makes the all NBA team again, or a non Randall Nick will be an all-star next year.
I'm going to go with Randall makes the all NBA team again. As someone who wrote as one of his preseason predictions that I did not think he would make the all NBA team again, not because I think he'll be bad. I just think some other players will, you know, the media will be like, all right, we took care of Julius last year. That said, I think he has a real shot. And I have to say, my opinion may have changed a little bit since I wrote that, because news today, Mr. Williamson, apparently not feeling too great down in New Orleans, or at least they don't want to put him on the court, one or the other. I don't know. I don't really care. That's unfortunate for him. But there's still a lot of competition for that spot. But I would say Julius, and then, cause here's the thing. I think this is the year that maybe RJ there's a lot of conversation like, ooh, should we be talking about RJ Barrett for an all-star spot? And then he doesn't actually get the spot. It's just like, it's, you know, it's an honor to be nominated type of deal.
I've been saying since well before preseason, after the offseason, that like RJ Barrett is going to get painted as a disappointment this year, like by the national media. Like,
you think so?
I don't think it's disrespect like normal. I think what they're going to do is the bait and switch and say, you yelled at us all summer for underrating this guy, and now he wasn't even an all-star, and they're going to pull that bar all the way up. And when he doesn't hit it, it's going to be like, oh, failing again. So no, I'm ready for it.
I could only see that if I swear I would have used this term even if had the last week not taken place. If the Knicks season went such that RJ was a better player but sacrificed his own numbers for the good of the team, I could see casuals. I swear I was going to say it anyway. I could see casuals being like, see, RJ sucks. He only averaged 13 points a game this year, right? That said, I do not think that's going to happen. I think RJ is going to be second in the team in shot attempts.
He's going to average more points this year than last year. I just don't think it'll be more than like 2 points more.
Gun to my head, I think he'll average more points this year than he did last year. He was at 17.6 or 8?
17.8. I think he gets that up to like 19.6. Cool, 19.6.
Guys, 20 points a game is a lot. It's not easy to score 20 points a game as a 21-year-old in the NBA.
6 rebounds, 3.5 assists, something like.
I know you've been calling this for a while. Well, we'll see what happens. Good question. All right, next up. These are all good questions so far, by the way.
Better question on the way for you, because you get to wax poetic about 67. Jake Ross with Taj Gibson turning back the hands of time. What does our center rotation look like? Who finishes games?
This is an impossible question, because Mitchell Robinson had such an odd year last year in that there was this like faux starting center competition in preseason that kind of, I don't think it was a real competition. It was just like, we're going to say there's a competition. And then it's like, oh yeah, Mitch is the starting center because he's Mitchell fucking Robinson. And then he got hurt, and then he came back, and Noel was already starting and had done pretty well. And then Mitch came and had probably the best game of his career. And then he got hurt a couple of days later. I struggle to fathom a world where if Mitchell Robinson is healthy, I'm not saying he's closing every game, but if you're asking me who's closing, like if you give me 10 games in a week and you're asking me all the centers are healthy, who's closing the most of the 10 games? I think Mitchell Robinson closes the most of the 10 games. That said, I could see myself predicting that there will be four different centers to close games within the span of 10, with like, give me Mitch for like 5 or 6. Give me Noel for 1 or 2. Give me Taj for 1 or 2. And give me Julius Randle for 1. I think it was meaningful that we saw Julius play alongside Amir Sims the other night. I know Tibbs did the same thing last year. He played Obi and Randle. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he played them not insignificant time together last preseason. And then we proceeded to see it for 30 minutes all of last year until the playoffs when he got desperate. But I don't know. Obi's shown a little bit of rim protections this preseason. We'll see if it carries over. And my hope that I have zero conviction in thinking will actually come true is that Tibbs knows if you want to win in the playoffs now, you have to be able to throw different looks at opposing teams. And every team that succeeded with any modicum of anything in the playoffs last year did so because they had different looks that they could go to. And the Knicks had one look, partially because they didn't have the personnel to throw multiple looks at teams. Now they
fourth lowest payroll. You know, I that's something I said all year. I was not going to hold against them.
And you're not wrong. And
that's something I said all year that they needed to address in the offseason.
And they did very well.
To look on like at a, or what I think will be a success story in regards to what you just said, I think the Golden State Warriors are a great team to bring up. Bielitsa, Otto Porter Jr. Like now that, you know, year two Wiseman, they have a lot of different lineups that they can throw at teams. Of course, when you have Mr. Wardell Jr. You know, it doesn't hurt, but I think that their offseason moves were good. Like Moody, Kuminga, Bielitsa, Otto Porter Jr. Like that's a weird group of names, but when you're talking about adding them to Draymond Clay style, like I like the versatility there. And I think in regards to the center rotation, if Taj can come in and give you 7-8 minutes standing in the corner, teams actually have to pay attention to him. That's something. I like think to, that's no, like some extra versatility.
I think the shooting part of it is good, but like the thing that is like Noel sometimes just isn't. I'm just gonna sound like I'm being a dick.
He's just out there, dude.
No, so you're right. I don't know how else to say. There are games when Nerlens Noel is just kind of a guy out there, and then there are other games where he looks like a man on fire and he really makes a difference and he has it going and he pumps the crowd up with steals or blocks, or whatever. Those are the games that he finishes. The games that he's just kind of out there, and this is why it's a tough question to answer. Up until the very end last year, Mitch would still have those games where you're just watching it and be like, man, he doesn't have it tonight. Head's not in it, whatever it is. It's just something's not right. And if you combine that with Noel being just a guy, then those are the games Taj ends. I'd like to think that Mitch year four, do we finally do away with those games where you're watching and you're like, yeah, something's off with Mitch tonight. He's not really focused. He's not whatever. Like you want to get paid? Fucking
Mitch is closing every game that he's playing.
If he wants to get paid, he needs to play like a guy who warrants closing every game. That is the way to say it. So we'll see if he does.
I think he does. I think as someone who has, I don't want to say infamously, but like infamously been on a certain side of the Mitch debate. Like I'm very much in on him this year. Based on everything we heard from the offseason, Coach KP, and just, you know, I mean, he went home and was, I swear to God, that dude was lifting weights every single day.
You can't fake what, it is very apparent. He did put on a lot of muscle.
So no, I'm with him this year. I think this will be a good year for him. So I think he closes games. I have that hope, but you're right about him needing to prove it. I think a lot of fans, because we know he can be so good, just kind of think he is that good now. He's like getting totally getting there. And I think he will be there this year, but he hasn't been there yet, which is something to note.
NBA history is littered with guys who you wonder why they never fully figured it out. And there are different gradients to that. Like Anthony Randolph, I don't know if you know who that is.
I know who that is.
Okay. Anthony Randolph is a guy who like never figured it out at all in games that matter. But there are other guys who were like, always seem to be like just on the cusp of really figuring it out and never fully could. And I'm not saying Mitch is that or isn't that. I just, we don't know. And there are many examples of guys who could never do it. So we'll see.
Right. No, but we're the KFS is in on Mitch for year four, is what I think the consensus seems to be.
Giddy up.
Giddy up. We're going to, oh my gosh, I didn't even realize Fuddy's next. So okay. David Fudernick, besides the most obvious choices, you know, Clyde, Pat, Mello, who do you think is the most popular Nick of all time?
I noticed this question when I was looking. I did not think of what my answer would be. Scott's honor. Okay, so the obvious ones that we're excluding are Patrick, Clyde, and anybody else? Willis, I guess.
He said Mello. Clyde, Pat, and Mello. Okay. He excluded. It's tough.
So I obviously never saw this person play live. I'm pretty sure he retired before. He did retire before I was born. My understanding or my what I've been able to gather from just listening to people talk about those teams is that Dave DeBuscher is probably the correct answer. That said, wow. I never saw Dave DeBuscher play. Oh yeah. I mean, if you just go talk to any person over the age of, what would they have to be, over 60, I guess, about that, who watched that Knick team. And they will talk your ear off and be like, so what? Who's this Dave DeBuscher guy? And then just be prepared to sit there for 10 minutes to listen to somebody wax poetic. I think the modern era answer would have been extremely easy, and it would have been Charles Oakley. And now it's not Charles Oakley anymore. For some, it might be. Shout out Bernardo Zarowski. But for others, it is not. I think the only, with all due respect to Latrell Sprewell, that would be my answer. I think the modern era answer is John Starks. And I don't know. I mean, if you're looking for someone more niche than that, like, people love the X-Men. I mean, Xavier McDaniel was here for one season and people friggin' love that guy. Oh man, but Anthony Mason. Oh, Anthony Mason's up there too. This is a really good question. It's really hard. And I don't think, like, there's like Pablo Prigioni, like, people love Pablo Prigioni for what he was, but would people love Pablo Prigioni if he wasn't this, like, almost like a, oh my God, it's like a party favor. He was here for what, 2 years? Like, if he was here for 10 years, would he have that same kind of kitsch to him? I don't know.
The Haslam. I don't even know what other player. Like, I think Udonis Haslam just.
But he's in a different category because he's a lifetime.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, he doesn't have that, you know.
Yeah. It's almost like this answer, to properly answer it, is to have like different categories. And I didn't even mention Jeremy Lin. I mean, like, what do you do with Jeremy Lin? Like, that's the other one.
People responded Bernard King.
I mean, look, everybody loves Bernard King. I don't know anybody who doesn't have a nice thing to say about Bernard King. But I'm just, you know what? My
generation is super lacking on knowledge of him. Be honest,
they probably are.
All right.
I'm going to make my life much easier than all of this. And my answer is going to be Dave the Busher, and we're going to move on.
All right. I mean, I didn't disagree from the jump. I've read some stuff about, you know, back then and the Busher being not the, but a guy, you know, Clyde was the superstar.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tibbs Fan Club. Trav wants to know.
Great name.
Two-part question. Get ready for the questions. One, realistic goals, timeline, and accomplishments within the Tibbs tenure. For you, I would say, you know, I don't want you sitting here being like, in 2026, they'll make it to the second round. You know,
realistic Eastern
Conference appearances, goals, timeline, accomplishments.
I don't
know. I think timeline covers all three. Just, what you think goes.
Yeah.
Down.
I don't know.
The Eastern Conference appearances.
Yeah. I don't know what the difference between goals and accomplishments are.
Tim's goal is to win every game in the book. Yeah. We know that. Accomplishments? Oh no, this is the number two is lofty though. I feel like the answer would, what accomplishments would it take for Tibbs to go down as the greatest Knick coach?
Okay. So let me answer these one at a time. So internal,
I told you two is lofty.
Internal goals for the organization. I would imagine the organization would like to win a playoff series this year. I know internally they thought at one point last year that their goal changed at some point last year to winning a playoff series last year. I'm confident in sitting here and saying, but that not that that should surprise anybody. Their goal should have been to win a playoff series last year. I think their goal this year is to win a playoff series. And that anything else would be gravy. And I think by hook or by crook, I would imagine behind the scenes, they think that they should be contenders by next season. Meaning 2022-23. How they get there, I don't know. The only other thing I would say, and why I hesitate to even offer that, is because I think Leon Rose and whoever else said it at Media Day means it when they say we're gonna play our cards like we're gonna play this thing smart. And the reason why I say that is if they really think after this year they have something really special in RJ Barrett and or whatever another young player or other young players, and they make a judgment call based on the superstar talent that becomes available, which we know it will, that it is not worth it for us to make X trade at this time, and in their judgment, that may push back the calendar for contention in extra season. I think they would do that at the same time. If they were to do that, then I think internally they would believe, all right, if we're keeping these guys, we still think, even if we hold on to the guys that we're keeping because we think they're so damn good, we should still be contenders.
Right.
I think either way you cut it, internally they feel like they should probably be contenders by 22-23. As far as Tibbs being the greatest coach in
Knicks history, pieces of jewelry.
No, I mean, look, it's Red has two and a finals appearance in a very different league. But those accomplishments were significant.
Yeah.
I mean, the question is if Tibbs, because here's the thing. Red also came in when the organization was bad and he was a scout and then he became coach and he turned them around, but he was a contributing factor to getting the talent there. So I think that's why Red's name is up in the rafters, because he played an integral role in multiple ways. So I guess that would be my way of answering this would be he would need at least two. He would need at least two titles.
I had the same thought. Two, and then assuming that includes, other appearances in the playoffs, decent amount of wins, all that good stuff.
If he won two titles, that would be.
I was going to say with what you were saying about pushing the cards, I think they just did that when you were saying like, oh, it's not worth it at this time to deal these players. I want to say Damian Lillard would be wearing orange and blue like right now.
I don't think that's been on the table yet. I mean, look, you may know something I don't.
I don't know. Probably don't know something you don't. But I just think like they had the pull and offer and nothing happened besides.
I wonder whether. Because I don't think the situation in Portland ever got to the point where Dame asked out. I feel like that would have been reported. But I wonder
Well, it was allegedly, but all that fun stuff.
I wonder if the Knicks ever got to a point where they felt if we made the push, would that have changed things over there?
Definitely thought that. I mean, they think about everything, the front office thing.
Of course.
They have Dr. Strange. It's literally their job. Just the Dr. Strange, $14 million outcomes, figure out what they want to do. That's it. That's what their job
is. Yeah. Good reference.
Well, I ever since we hired Leon, I've called back to that because we are so deep in the pit. They got to pull us out real swift. We have a question next from frequent asker, Ray Marcano.
I think this is the other one I saw.
He asks about Mr. Quickley.
Okay. I didn't see this. Never mind.
Ray says, Quick seems to be driving to the basket a little more, and instead of floating, going to that little scoop shot. He's guessing this is by design. What's the ceiling on an IQ who can add penetrating consistently to his, three and float game that seems to already be there?
I mean, if it's good penetration, he could finish. Oh man.
yep, my thoughts too.
Oof. So it's funny because I wrote this the other day that I think, we keep talking about Emmanuel Quickley. Is he a point guard? Is he not a point guard? And thinking of him because I do think I think his ceiling is as is the case with almost any NBA player, with a couple of exceptions, Manu Ginobili being probably the most recent famous one. Any NBA player's ceiling is as a starting player. So I can't imagine Emmanuel Quickley ever starting for a contending team at the two guard position. If he's starting for a team that's really good, he's starting at the point guard position. And we always get to this, well, that means he needs to be a point guard. But he doesn't really, depending on the talent that is surrounding him. If he just needs to be able to do basic stuff, and there's a wing initiator on the team in addition to Julius Randle to do all that. This is a long-winded way of saying that, I think as much as the penetration is important, I do still think we need to see a little bit more development in the point guardy aspects of the game. That said, for as much as the offense looked clunky against the Pistons in the most recent preseason game, when
I was really frustrated halftime, man.
It was frustrating because he didn't run the team well. But again, I don't know if that's the fairest way to judge, because on those backup units, he's not with top end NBA talent. If you put him as a starting, I'm not suggesting the Knicks do this, obviously, but if you put him as a starting point guard around with top end NBA talent, and he's not really initiating the offense as much, and you have again a wing initiator plus maybe Randle and whatever, will that make his job easier? And I've just said all of that, and now I'm thinking to myself, well, is that really the best use of him, or is the best use of him to be exactly what he is now, which is a six man, and a guy who comes in and he messes shit up and he'll finish every other game? And to that end, I think the penetration would go a long way. And what is his ceiling? Six man of the year. Six man of the year. That would be what I would put his ceiling on. I'd be thrilled with, by the way.
Oh, the ceiling. I'm going to come out as offended by this.
I think that's fair. I love Emmanuel Quickley as much as anyone. I promise you that. But it's a unique player type. He's a small guard.
Right.
He does not naturally have point guard. I'm not saying he's a point guard. He's not a point guard right now.
I think he's going to be better than Jordan Clarkson is right now, though. So the name.
Listen, if he is, then that's
fine. Jordan Clarkson's really damn good too.
Jordan
Clarkson. I'm not an underrater of Jordan Clarkson. But let's look at a name like D'Angelo Russell real quick. That's a guy who I think personally, and for over a year, I've said this, is best suited as a sixth man. That's not because I don't think he can be a starter. It's because of how much he wants the ball and how effective he is with it, you know? And I think he's best served being the best sixth man in the league rather than being a really meh starter that could perhaps hinder his fellow starters. Now, I don't think IQ hinders anybody. He can shoot from 35. That spacing is ridiculous. I think if he has consistent paint pressure, my ceiling would be more like he has a 6'9 wingspan. Like if CJ McCollum and like Frank Ntilikina had a child, I don't know, man. Like, well, that's a player if he can put consistent pressure on the rim, man.
CJ McCollum is the best floater in the league aside from, like, I don't know,
Emmanuel Quigley. There are several. I'd say Rashawn Holmes is up there. That's one of my dark horse picks for best floater in the league.
That is a different category of.
Don't look at me like that.
No, we're talking about guards here. Anyway, okay, go to the next question. All right.
The next question is actually really fitting for your answer to a previous question, and it comes from locker room. It became green room, was it? KFS green room champion Mensa. KFS green room champion Mensa Smith, Mensa, aka RJ Barrett's max contract, wants to know what percentage chance you give the Knicks to win a playoff series this year. He adds in that as the current executive member of the Knicks are going to be the 3-seed committee, he thinks whoever we're going to play in the first round is going to give us trouble no matter what, just because the East is so good this year.
Yeah.
Percent chance that we win a playoff series, if you had to put a number up.
There's not going to be any such, I mean, unless you get matched up with a team who's dealing with injuries, there's not going to be any such thing as an easy playoff series.
No, but if you have right now, someone says right now, what's the percent chance that the New York Knicks win a playoff series this year? Your 2-digit answer is.
Oh, I just got that, Andrew. My 2-digit answer is, you're assuming it's 2 digits. How do you know it's not under 10%?
Because the first could be zero.
That's true.
I knew you were going to say that. I came up with the retort in advance.
Good job. Well, it's less than 50. That's more than 10.
I was going to say 35. So I like where you're starting.
just to keep it clean, I'll do 33.33. I think they got about a 1-in-3 shot because just if I play this out.
Oh, no, they could get matched up against Brooklyn in the first round and.
You know Kyrie what? I don't could know.
Hold return extravagantly, and you know maybe they hold squeeze on. Out. No, I know he'll make a big deal out of being back. I just know it. I know.
Let me really put some math to this, because if they're at three or it's just, okay. Hold on. I'm gonna actually math. I'm gonna do math for a second, because I have to factor in if they're a 3 or 4 seed, they're getting home court advantage. I'm giving them a slightly higher chance of getting out of the first round, something like 55%. 55, 60. If they're the 5 or 6 seed, it's lower. It's like 45, 40. So those two even out, right? So if they're the 3, 4, 5, or 6 seed, I'm basically giving them 50-50, except do I think there's a better chance that they're a 3 or 4 or a 5 or 6? That factors in as well. And then I got to factor in the possibility that they could drop down to 7 or 8, which I don't think is crazy at all. I think that's in the cards. It's possible. I may not think it's likely, but I think it's possible. And then factor in, okay, on the whatever 20-25% chance they're a 7 seed, then the odds of them getting out of the first round are probably 0. So I have to factor that in as well. All that math in my head, I think I'm going to arrive at the answer I was going to give 2 minutes ago, which is about 33% chance.
33.3 repeating. Listen, I like it. You know, I told you my number was 35. So
Andrew,
for those of you think John is not being positive enough about his projections for the Knicks this year, tune in to next week's Patreon when he and Jeremy go through their full preseason predictions. The text that John referenced that you guys heard him say, I just got that, Andrew, was me yelling at him, do not spoil Patreon. And now we get to tease it because you heard what John thinks about winning a playoff series. But you'll get to hear on the Patreon pod which playoff series that might be.
And we had some fun. We had some fun with that.
We'll tell you after, Chris. Don't worry.
No, the Patreon shows are fun, man.
You're in.
I'm just saying. Those are good.
You have a lot of fun.
We're gonna go cross country, like half cross country, for this next question. It is unrelated to the Knicks, and that is why I am now going to relate it to the Knicks before I ask it. And that is, you know, I guess keep in mind this team's big man. Notable big man when you answer this question, Chip Murphy.
Oh,
I know he's asking.
I know he's asking this because
he and I disagree vehemently on this team. I think they're over, will cash. He thinks they're under, will cash. Enough on both of our sides to have listed them as one of our most confident picks. I said, I'm very confident that the Wolves over will hit. He said he's very confident that the Wolves under will hit.
What is there?
Murphy wants to know. It's like 35, dude. It's like 34 and a half. That high? That's nothing. What for John, what do you think of the Timberwolves this season? And I connected it to their center because that might be a thing or not.
I mean, look, it's a good question. I don't think I trust them this year to be good. I think they're interesting, and could they be good? Could they be a play-in team? Could they be an ace seed? I don't. Yeah, maybe. Sure. I just
play-in. 38 wins playing, I think, is like super fair.
Okay, that's you. We're doing our wins draft on Saturday. Feel free to remember that then. I just look, there is a ton of organizational stability in the West. There is a ton of organizational competence in the West. And there are a ton of really good players in the West leading good teams. So even if Karl Anthony Towns finally does come out and have the season that we've been waiting for him to have for seemingly some time,
this is year seven. So
yeah, it's been a while. I still don't know. Will that necessarily make Minnesota better than like the Blazers? Or I'm trying to think of some other, like the Clippers, to say nothing of those upper echelon Western Conference teams, am I betting my life on the fact that the Timberwolves are going to be better than the Kings? At this point, I'd probably bet on them being better than the Pelicans, but that's about it. But again, like the Spurs, like, you know, we, again, I'm not spoiling next week's Patreon, but like the Spurs, everyone talk about sleeping. Everyone's sleeping on the Spurs. Why? Because they don't have top end talent. Karl Anthony Towns is a top end talent, right? Timberwolves should be better than the Spurs. Okay. Wake me when that happens. So I'm probably a little lower on Timberwolves than you are, Chris.
I don't know. Josh Primo. We'll see. He looks like a different player than what we saw at Bama. I think he just played his role really well. And I totally get why he was maybe going to shoot up boards. I think that kid might be good. And we were definitely all very shocked by that pick. So, you know, I hope things go well for the Spurs. But like, I don't know. I'm thinking about teams like the Kings and the Spurs, and I'm just like not moved. And I think Edwards, who I love Ant Edwards. And
I like Edwards too. I like Edwards.
I love Ant. And I think him under Finch last year was great as a rookie. I think it would be wrong of me, because of the extent to which I hyped up RJ Barrett and his ability to get through the adversity of his rookie year, to not be super high on Edwards too, because he came out once they hired Finch and put up like 22, 6
or something. He was a little bit more efficient. He still had some like crazy, you know, you're 6 for 24 games or whatever, but
yeah.
Edwards was a lot, I was a lot more, I came away after last season a lot more impressed by Anthony Edwards than I thought I was going into his rookie year. I'll just say that.
Yep.
All right.
Final question.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes. And We're going to allow you the ability now to travel where in time you'd like. Alex Trateros wants to know.
Shout out to Alex. Hold on. Congratulations to Alex. He's getting married this weekend. Big shout out to him. Alex is like a super, super nice guy, super cool dude. I just went on his podcast a few weeks ago. So congratulations to him and his bride to be. Hope they have a wonderful wedding and many, many happy years after that.
If you could write the biography of any past or current Nick, now that is coach, that is player, that is executive.
Oh, wait, do I get access to the player or the person?
Who would it be and why? That was the question. So I would think you would have to go with people who are alive to get access to them.
Yeah, Pat Riley.
Oh.
I knew that. That's the one. I knew that was coming.
Yeah. Sit in a room and fucking talk about Riley for hours on end.
That's the one.
It's not. I mean, okay. So that's the obvious. Let me actually think of a different answer because that's the easy number one for me.
If you want, we can make this we can break it into three, and you can do your coach, your player, and then we have your exec. But.
Well, no, that's
or does Riley count as the coach? I was going to say he counts as the coach.
The reason he only counts as coach is because, and why his story is so fascinating because they didn't want to make him an exec. The exec that I would choose, oddly enough, it wouldn't be Phil Jackson because Phil is already he's literally an open book. He's written how many? 9 of them, whatever it is. I've read them. I don't think there's much left to tell in that story. So it would not be Phil Jackson. Who do I want to spend time? This is going to sound fucking crazy. Sitting and talking to Isaiah. I think if Isaiah was going to be,
that was going to be my guess.
And I think at this point in his life and stage of his career, I bet you Isaiah would be pretty forthcoming.
No, he just a couple months ago on Twitter, someone got in an argument with him and he was still defending trading as if like he didn't do anything negative. So,
I mean,
he was like the Knicks drafted every year I was there. All right.
That's great. Good for you, Isaiah. I mean, just from a picking the basketball brain of someone who has maybe seen as much and been around as much and been in on as much as, I don't know, 10 people in the history of basketball. Donnie Walsh, you could do worse than Donnie Walsh. I think maybe Donnie Walsh would be my executive. Although, I mean, shout out to Leon Rose. Because again, he's been in those rooms, made those deals. But I think I would say Donnie
Walsh. I was going to say,
what
if Leon came with Wes? Because they are a package deal, those two. We know this. If Leon came with Wes. That's it. That's
you know what though. I'm not the person to write World Wide West's biography. I write anybody's fucking biography. To be clear,
Spike to write that.
I'm really not suited to write William World Wide West's biography. I think I would be able to cobble together something decent on Donnie Walsh though. I'd be able to ask him the right questions.
Cobble. I love the Macri verbs.
So executive Donnie Walsh, coach. Pat Riley just real quick, just so I don't want to seem like I'm disrespecting the man who I just interviewed on this podcast 2 weeks ago. Jeff Van Gundy, I feel like, has shared so much of himself on broadcasts now for years and years and years and years. I feel like we have a pretty good idea of, and he also just shared a lot with me. That's the only reason I wouldn't say Jeff. And then player. Oh man. This is hard. It has to be someone.
It has to be Spree for you, dude.
I don't know that I'm that interested in Latrell Sprewell.
I couldn't have fathomed another answer. I swore you were going to go Spree over Pat, over Starks, over.
I don't know. H2. I mean, I know.
Maybe H2O because he still works with the team.
No, not really. I think the obvious answer is Ewing, but.
I just got the answer. I just figured out what the right answer is. And now we'll see if you get it. And then I'll tell you what the right answer is. Once you get it. The answer I just came up with, there's no better. I swear.
I'll put anything like on. Fucking, is it like Stephon Marbury?
No, I thought mine was Clyde.
I don't. So this is going to sound harsh.
No, I'm fascinated in what Clyde has to say. I think Clyde, on top of the world that long ago. That's nuts, dude.
There are books about Clyde.
Yeah, I have a. Do you have 1 second? Hold on.
Good. Well, I'll talk to Chris while John goes and gets a book. Thank you, everybody, for tuning into the next Homeschool Podcast. We'll be wrapping up in just a few seconds. Chris, if you could write a book about one Nick, who would it be?
Oh, Carmelo Anthony.
It's Melo? Okay.
What angle
would it be? Like
there's so much to say about his time here and why it was so weird. Why the end of it was so weird. Whenever something is weird, it's not actually weird. You just don't get it, is what I've learned. And like, I want to get it. I want to get exactly what happened from tidbits and whatever, like you can piece together stuff about Phil and whoever else. Like, I think the guy who was the face of New York City for like 6 or 7 years has some stuff to say. And I'd love to hear it. Hey,
John, what is
that
hash?
That is an original edition of Rock and Steady. I'll read the whole title. Rock and Steady, A Guide to Basketball and Cool by Walt Frazier and Ira Berkow. With an introduction by Bill Russell, as it were. I found this in a used bookstore. And it is one of my prized possessions. Sits right next to my Walt Glazier signed basketball. It's not that I don't love Walt. It's not that I wouldn't be interested in writing a biography about him. I don't know how reliable of a narrator he is at this point. I don't know. I'm just kind of, I feel like we hear on broadcasts a lot of his memories of that time. And I don't know how in depth he could, I'd want to get someone who was like in their 40s, 50s like that, who could really, like is still really can recall back. I may have for player. I may just have to give the boring answer of Ewing.
Building.
I'd say Ewing. I'll go with Ewing for the player.
Well, John and Andrew, that would wrap us up for today. Those are the answers to the questions that the listeners had post. You ready for this? Post pre-season, pre-opening night. So that little John's got a bobblehead. What do you got going on back there?
Is that a Clyde action figure?
It's a Clyde action figure.
Yeah.
I tried to put up a shelf in my little recording studio here, and I keep knocking it down. So I think I may have to adjust.
And give up on the shelf. Thank you everyone for listening. No, this was fun as usual.
Chris signing us off.
I like getting to annoy John. I do like a mini sign out, and then like Andrew or John signs out. I thought that's how. I mean, I can sign. What is there to be promoted?
I didn't host the show for the first time in whatever it was 3 years. I might as well let someone else sign off at this point.
Go ahead, Chris. You got it. We believe in you. Plug the Patreon. Wow. Tell people to go give us 5 stars. Post next week.
All that. So long story short, if the Knicks are playing a basketball game at halftime of that basketball game, I'll be live on Twitter. At post game of that basketball game, John is live on YouTube. That's 2 live streams per basketball game. Huge. KFS Patreon, exclusive pods, John's unfiltered thoughts on topics that I think he would get like just the all-time list and stuff. Like, he get yelled at so much if these were out. So they're in the Patreon. They're locked away.
I just got an angry text from Yash a minute ago because I had Giannis.
Because you did something on your list that people can go to Patreon and find out about.
Yash is right. And it, I won't spoil
it. Okay.
Patreon.
What I will say is it's regarding John's placement of Giannis. And that's all you'll say.
Who, by the way, and people, this was in the free newsletter, so I could say this. Uh-huh. He was in the category of guys that I literally wrote. I did not need to look up any stats for any of these players. They are automatic, no doubt about it. Like, And there were only 42 of those guys. So Giannis is in that group. No one's sleeping on Giannis, Yash. You hear me? No one's sleeping on Giannis. Fucking casual. Go, keep going, Chris.
Well, the same way that I would say that, I would say don't sleep on the KFS merch store or the Patreon. Everything has gone to shambles.
Chris, you said you had this. Keep it together.
You guys are falling apart. How am I supposed to keep? Listen.
That's the job.
We are doing great. Check out the KFS halftime and post-game live streams. Check out the KFS Patreon and merch store.
Plug already, Chris.
And I'm still very excited for our event on November 17th.
Yes.
At the KFS at the Garden. I'm gonna bring it up and get everyone excited about it that's going, because it's an exciting time. So
it is.
Thank you to you guys for accompanying this mailbag journey. And I'll see you at the 17th in person at the latest. Huh? How about that?
Great job, Chris. Thank you. Andrew, thank you for producing this episode. One more shameless plug. Don't forget, check out Final Review.
Yeah.
This week with my good friends, Andrew Claudio and Bernardo Zarowski, as they talk about, is it the greatest horror movie of all time? I guess you'll have to listen to find out. You'll
just have to listen and find out.
You gotta
out.
See. You gotta be Halloween. In the know to know, you know?
Halloween. But no, this is the seventh episode. The first six have been awesome. Final Review. Look it up wherever you get your podcasts. If you like movies, or even if you don't, you just want to hear two people having engaging conversation. On that note, thank you, Chris. Thank you, Andrew. And we will see you for another episode very soon.
There we go. Jeez.
That was awesome.
Oh, man. Yeah, man. I was wondering if this plane was going to land.
It landed. We got. I mean, we may have landed it like Denzel.
The casual flight, shit. Not,
exactly.
No, that,
it's
that,
Denzel.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.